it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome, dear listeners, to Season 15, Episode 10. I'm your host, Otis Gyre, and in this episode, I'll be performing two tales to terrify you, courtesy of author Dale Thompson. Tonight, we'll hear stories of baffling burials and fickly fortune-telling. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first spine-tingling story. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. You've heard of our selected author before, I'm sure. A man who's no stranger to the program. A man of many words. Who not only enjoys giving you an enjoyable spooky tale with just a pinch of whimsy, but also enjoins you to expand your vocabularic repertoire by a small amount. Well, in tonight's stories, give him a moment to elucidate you about what some fellows, who don't go looking for the supernatural, but it finds them anyway. In our first tale of the evening, it all starts out with a phone call. A phone call with a strange offer, a somewhat chilling offer, but one that is, at the very least, lucrative. Of course, knowing exactly what you're in for might not end up being the best course of action. Without further ado, I present to you One Hole to Go. There's something morbid and unearthly about what we were doing. Fear had long escaped my faculties. I thought the dread had been replaced by an overwhelming delirium. I'd never dug a grave before, and standing 6 feet down in what could only be described as the abysmal pits of Tartarus, at least I was not alone. Robert, my friend, since we were teenagers, was giving me a helping hand in the dig. Robert and I had met at the gym. At the time, we were heavy weightlifters, but we didn't look much like weightlifters any longer. Age had crept up and disfigured what we had chiseled into a winter layer of smooth, bloated fat. Well, I wouldn't say fat like the fat lady at the circus, but we had put on a relatively few pounds. Standing in that grave, a grim revelation came to light. This light was not brighter, but rather a dull expectation that ran the length of my imagination. I swear my veins were bulging in some vascular display of glowing green through my skin. I began to feel flush, like my face had just been set ablaze, and then I realized it was pure adrenaline that was fueling me. I was physically exhausted. It was no easy task for two men to dig a 6-foot hole large enough for a body. This odd sensation, which had caught me off guard, had presented itself impartial to my present needs by inducing bodily changes in me, breaking out in some sugar-fixed, tortured laughter as if it was ripped from my throat in stretched, painful sounds of agony. I doubled over, cramping with gut-wrenching, squeezing pain in my abdomen. My eardrums splintered with bellows, which I assumed were agonal awakenings of my own consciousness. In a bodily strain, I reached with my fingers for my ears to make sure they were still attached to the sides of my head. Had we dug so deep that we had awakened the evil hordes? Did hell exist below my feet, just below the worms and beetles? Had we disturbed the sleeping Cthulhu? Was it possible, upon this unholy ground that we had desecrated, that we had plumbed the blackest pits of hell? I believe we had. And the reason for me being convinced was the foul stench from the sewer of corpses I could smell and the repugnant burn in my nose of perpetual decomposition, not to mention the foul, dark oil of Saturnalia horror that was seeping like a breached dam into the grave. It was time to pull the body into the hole and free ourselves from the ever-growing pungency that had caused my dizzying lassitude that had sickened me. I scrubbed the soles of my shoes on the grass in an attempt to remove the black oily gunk that had managed to cake itself on them before I could be lifted out of the hole. I joined Rob, who gave me a hand up topside, temporarily escaping the miasma just below us. We were back in the land of the living, dreading grievously that this had to be done, and we were not finished yet. Once I was satisfied, and I could live with what remained, we began the arduous task of throwing in the mound of dirt one shovelful at a time. A man could either get in really good shape, digging these graves by hand, or possibly permanently throw their back out, one or the other. It was hard work and laborious, to say the least. As we filled in that ghastly hole, I thought back to simpler times when I wasn't doing this type of nocturnal work. This is a routine, repeated. Receive a phone call, collect the corpse, bring the corpse to the cemetery, dig a hole, toss it in, cover it up. Dead is dead, and the Bible says the dead know nothing. It started with a phone call. Pick up a corpse. A corpse? Yes, a corpse. Who's calling? Someone who's trying to save your sorry backside. I'm not picking up a corpse. You'll pick it up if you don't want your world turned upside down. Turned upside down? Why are you repeating everything I'm saying? Because when you say it, I'm not understanding it. There's nothing to understand. You killed a man, and all the evidence points to you. I've retrieved the body because you have carelessly mishandled it and left more than just circumstantial evidence there for the police. The police? Yes, the police. I have the body, and you need to collect it and follow my instructions. Instructions? If you repeat anything I say one more time, I'm going to add you to this body bag. Okay, I'm listening. You pick up your dead body that I've so graciously collected for you. Bring the body to McAnally's cemetery. You dig the hole. It's not that hard, 6 feet by 3 to 4 feet, because you have to be able to get down into the hole and shovel. Slope one end so you can more easily crawl out. The hole will be marked in a rectangle on the ground with a line. Dig there. Once you're deep enough, get out of the hole and roll the body into it. Cover it back up with dirt. I didn't kill anyone. Oh, yes, you did. Now, here's the kicker, my friend. Anytime I call you, you will listen and do exactly what I instruct you to do, or one of two things will happen, according to how much patience I have on that day. You'll pick up the bodies, or you'll either be getting a visit from the police or a visit from me personally. Bodies? Yes. I may need your services later on. What do you mean later on? Bury more bodies? See, now you're getting it. And don't worry. As long as you do exactly what I say, no one will ever know what you're doing. Why me? Why not somebody else? Someone like yourself? Like myself? You don't know anything about me, and you never will. Just like that, I'm supposed to just do what you tell me? Just like that, Armand. Yes, yeah, it was a frightful phone call, and yes, the voice on the other end knew my name. I initially thought it must be a prank, so I called my friend, Robert. Robert, I just received the weirdest phone call of my life. Even weirder than when the pizza guy got lost bringing pizzas to us and ended up crashing his scooter while talking with you on the phone for directions. That wasn't odd, Robert. That was tragic. But listen, a man called and said if I don't do what he says, he's either going to frame me for murder or turn the evidence into the police. Murder? Who's dead? Did you do it? No, I didn't kill anyone. And I don't know how anyone is dead or if they're even dead yet. Could it be a prank? That's why I'm calling you. Did you put someone up to this to be funny? No way, man. I don't find murder funny at all. I didn't think so. What should I do? If he calls back, I guess you do what he says and see if there is a body. This one's strange, man. I was convinced that Robert had nothing to do with it, but even more strangely, he volunteered to help me if I wanted him to. I guess I'd have to ask the voice on the other end of the line if I could have some company in this gruesome mission. The following night, the phone rang. I knew who it was because Robert was the only one who ever called me, and I had spoken to him earlier in the day. I called him to confirm if the voice on the other end of the line said it was okay for him to help me, if he was still up for some digging. Robert said that he was. As suspected, the phone call coming in was the mysterious voice of my new employer. Armand, I have instructions for you. I have a question first. Go ahead. Can my friend Robert give me a hand? Is he trustworthy? Yes, very. He's my best friend. Can he keep his mouth shut? Yes, he's very good at keeping secrets. I have no problem with you having Robert to assist. It may make things go quicker. But the same applies to him. Once this begins, he's liable as much as you are, Armand. But I won't pay you extra for this. I'll have to split what I give you. Pay? Yes. Did I not mention I was going to reward you for your service? No, you never mentioned payment. I'm sorry. With each body, you'll receive $2,500. $2,500? That's a lot of money. Not for me, it's not. Now you have initiative. I was a bit dumbfounded that this complete stranger was going to pay me for burying bodies. This was the most peculiar thing, I believe, that had ever crossed my path. I was instructed to go to Lake Lanier. So I went, and at a specific boat dock where I was, I found the first body. The body was in a body bag about halfway down the pier. Robert and I must have looked highly suspicious, yet there wasn't another soul in sight. We quickly manhandled the package and tossed it into the back of my truck. I was totally creeped out knowing that someone was dead in there. The traumatizing part was that I actually handled the body. I drove us to the cemetery, where at the height of night, even the ghosts had given up their hauntings. I reminded myself that I did not know this person. I found this work ominous. The moon never failed to give off a phosphorus glow, as if an all-seeing eye was keeping a record of what we did. I suppose it was an antinomian living under divine grace, and yet I broke no laws or killed a single soul. And this is where my story began.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We buried the body. Both Robert and I were starving. And being filthy as pigs, we decided to go straight to my place and clean up, then have a bite to eat. I had wished this work was in the day, but then we could have swung by a Bullfrog's bar and grill and maybe a pig's tail. But as it was, we had TV dinners in the microwave. The morning after the first burial, I awoke early and went straight to the kitchen to put on some coffee. I noticed a white envelope on the table, so I opened it. I found $2,500 cash. There was no note. How in the world did anyone get into my house? I'd locked the doors and windows, even the deadbolt. Now I was more worried than ever. When the phone rang, I practically jumped out of my hide. "Hello?" I answered. "Good work. I take it you found your reward." "I did, thank you," I said, feeling terrible about the whole situation, but knowing I didn't have a choice. "Amand, I want you to go to your mailbox." "Mailbox?" "You're doing it again, Armin. Stop repeating everything I say and just go." I laid down the phone and went to the mailbox, where I found a brown package. I brought it to the house and laid it down on the kitchen table. "Now what?" "Open it and take out the contents." I did as I was instructed, and my mouth gaped open. There were at least 30 pictures of Robert and I at the dock collecting the body bag, and then even more of us burying the blasted thing. "You see, Armand, this is my insurance that you and your fat friend will not do anything stupid." "We're not planning on it anyway. Can you tell me why I'm doing this, or even who was the person in the bag?" "You're doing this because you're a good Samaritan, and you are restoring what should have been restored years ago. I'll tell you more when I call tomorrow." And then the phone went dead. I found it rude and unprofessional how the caller just hung up on me. Over the next week, I did not hear from the mysterious caller, but I did do some investigation on my own. Robert and I conducted a major internet search of Lake Lanier. We found that the lake had a dark and deadly reputation, that dozens of people had gone missing on the lake over the years. And unnerving that was, well, what was even more sinister was how the lake was created in the first place. Turns out it's a man-made lake, full of folklore and legends, ghosts and unexplainable sightings. Neither Robert nor I had any previous knowledge of the lake itself. Admittedly, the Army Corps of Engineers who flooded this valley did not exhume the graves from the cemetery, simply washing over them. Many people lost their homes or relocated, losing all they had worked to earn. Generations of families had worked the farms and these communities with names such as Castleberry, Bottom, and Oscarville, and they were now in the watery dark depths. It was practically a 50-square-mile reservoir. The lake was massive. The more we probed into the matter, the more evidence we salvaged, learning about dozens of ghost sightings and strange underwater creatures that had been reported. We learned of civil unrest with racial violence and falsely accused men of color. There had been horrible racial murders, and it appeared that this valley did, in fact, hold historical enigmas that left Robert and I even more dumbfounded. Our investigations led us to uncomfortable findings. We had no doubt that the persecution of the African Americans in this community had been no less than criminal, and if any place was haunted by the culpability of genocide, prejudice, and bigoted hate, this place had all of the tapestries. The bodies? What about the bodies? Who are they? Robert struggled to understand. I can only assume that these are not fresh bodies. What we're expected to do is to move the bodies that were once in the lake, I presumed. Then Who's retrieving them from the bottom of the lake? Robert inquisitively asked. The answer that came out of my mouth rattled me even. The lake is giving up its dead. I could only imagine the severity of emotions the original people of the valley felt when they were warned that they had to leave all that they knew. These people had deep generational roots, and for them, the land was priceless, yet the government was quick to insult them with the buying price, and thus all was lost. How could the residents not feel betrayed, angry, hurt? How could fear and hopelessness not clutch them in a tight, suffocating squeeze? This resentment would have carried over from family to family for years and years. The synopsis was poignant and emotive, bringing Robert, evocatively, to one conclusion. Lake Lanier was giving up its dead and someone was collecting the bodies. But why would they need us in the initial stage? Why ask us to get involved and dirty our hands? I had no answers for this. The phone rang. Hello? Hello, Armin. I've been informed that you've been doing some research. Yes. How'd you know that? Armin, you must go to the lake tomorrow, 11 p.m., sharp. There you'll find two bundles. You mean two bodies? And how did you know that I've been reading up in the lake? Armand, is that your most important question? No, actually, it's not. Who are you and why are you asking us to do this? That's two questions. Any preference on the one I'll answer? Yes, why? Who else can I trust? Do we know one another? That which is important is that I know you. What's up with this cryptic riddle talk? If you're so trusting of me to get this done for you, why not fill me in on more detail? It's for your own safety, Armin. There are forces at play here that are not in the realm of the living. Well, I suspected that much. Are Robert and I in any type of danger? Not unless you fail to collect the two bundles and bury them properly. Is that a threat of some kind? Oh, I would never threaten you. I'm just a messenger, a liaison, between their world and ours. So please, for all of our sakes, just collect, transport, dig, and bury the bodies tomorrow night. The phone went dead. The following night, Robert and I were back at Lake Lanier. Two black body bags lay next to each other on the dock. They were not hard to move for two grown men. I imagined that if these bodies had been down in the lake, they were decomposed beyond any imagination. I also worried, why two this time, which led me to suppose this could have been husband and wife. I had not been asked to dig two holes, so my guess was they should be buried together. After we reverently loaded them into my truck and snapped down the topper for concealment, we proceeded to McAnally's cemetery, where we found the marker as to where the bodies were to be laid to rest. The digging seemed much easier than last time. We had dug the grave in about 5 hours. We positioned the bodies side by side and took a moment to reflect. I could only convince myself that we were doing the right thing. After we had filled in the hole, I dropped Robert off at his house. He only lived a couple of miles from me. And I continued home. My mind was flipping through the mental pictures of the things my eyes had already recently seen. When I arrived home, I found a brown envelope on my doorstep. Inside was $5,000 cash. I suppose it was more if there is more than one body. I was absolutely exhausted. My shoulders ached from pitching dirt, and my back was stiff as a board. I took a long, hot bath and slept in until midday. That's when the phone rang. I thought, oh, no, not so soon. I answered the phone, and it was not the strange voice on the other end. It was Robert. I'm doing some thinking, Robert informed me. Yeah, me too. Far too much. My head's spinning, I exclaimed. Robert had a proposition. Let's buy a couple of infrared cameras and position them facing the dock where we collect the bodies. Well, that's a great idea. Then we can at least see who or what we're dealing with. Oh, and by the way, we got paid double last night, so I owe you $2,500. Sweet. I don't want to spoil our new income, but we really ought to get those cameras today. Robert said, his voice excited either by extra money or the surveillance idea he proposed. Let me get ready and I'll come pick you up. Do you know where we can get the cameras? I asked. Yeah, I'll be ready when you get here, Robert answered. Shortly thereafter, I collected Robert and we made our way to the camera store, and I did not even know it existed. He bought two high-quality cameras, which set us back a pretty penny. We didn't stop for breakfast, but drove straight to the lake. Inconspicuously, we positioned the cameras facing the dock in concealed locations. These cameras would record the footage, store the data, and then we would simply extract the information. Then we would know if we were dealing with a man or a phantom. To our good fortune, we received our third call that very night. Robert just so happened to have stayed at my house, and we played video games until about 6 p.m. Hello, Armand. Hope you're well. Yes, I am well. I need you tonight to collect another bundle. You did very well, understanding that the two from the last collection were to be buried together. Tonight, there will be two more for you, and I wish you to bury them in the same manner. No problem. The phone went dead. That guy doesn't have any phone etiquette, I said to Robert. So, tonight? Robert sounded overenthusiastic. Man, you're really digging this, aren't you? I smiled, waiting to hear his answer. You got that right. It's creepy, feels mysterious and dangerous. Not sure how many laws we're breaking, but I'm loving the pay they do in cash. No Uncle Sam to tax me on it. Robert seemed to have found his purpose in life. I was happy for him. Me, on the other hand, I was unsure about every aspect of it. What if we were seen, caught, or arrested? How were we going to explain any of this? I sure hope the cameras were a good buy. We could use some hard evidence. There we stood, looking at the dock as we'd done before. No surprises. There were two black body bags. We delicately loaded them into the truck, snapped down the cover, and took a real good look around to make sure we were not being watched. But how could we really know? Our cameras were still in position, and as far as we could tell, they had not been tampered with. I took the memory cards and inserted clean ones and made haste getting out of there. Another night of digging and burial. We were anxious to get back to my house so we could see if our hidden cameras had captured anything revealing. Once back at the house and not even taking the time to clean up, we loaded the memory cards into the computer and executed the downloads. But not before we picked up another brown envelope from the porch filled with cash. The anxiety was high when the image of the first camera came onto the screen. It was still daylight. Nothing at all was happening. I began to fast forward, skipping multiple frames at a time until the camera revealed the nighttime. At the stroke of midnight, something came from the water's edge where the water and the bank were even. Walking, hunched over, arms dangling by its side, its bony head had little patches of hair and its chin drooped, resting on its chin. It appeared to be a man that had emerged from the murky water. No features could be distinguished to exactness, but it was a rotting corpse. Robert and I were aghast. Following, not far behind him, was a second corpse coming into view. Although it, too, was decomposed to an extreme degree, we could make out that this was a female, shorter than the man, but walking with the same zombie-like gait. The female came from the water and both headed in the direction of the pier. Their flesh was the only threads hanging from the bone, and her rib cages were clearly visible, for neither was clothed. They dragged their withered feet as if each step was their very last. I could not imagine how these undead creatures had mobility. There were no eyes in the sockets to guide them, but they never missed a step as they made their way at a snail's pace to the pier, and then once there, both awkwardly laid down beside one another on the deck. They then were still. Neither moved again. Some time passed. Robert and I were fixated on the screen at the incredible episode we had seen with our own eyes. As ridiculous as it all seemed, this unlikely event occurred, and we had it on camera. Literally shocking in every aspect, but mighty intriguing. Then what were we waiting for? Another person entered the scene, and they were clearly visible. This was a man, all in black, wearing a ball cap with a large backpack and wearing gloves. He approached the two creatures, stood over them, made the sign of the cross with his right hand, then went to work. He opened the backpack and pulled out two large black body bags. Carefully laying them on the ground alongside of the corpses, he moved the bodies onto each one and zipped them up. The man folded his hands and bowed his head. It appeared that he said a prayer, and without looking back, he walked away and out of the frame. We both caught a glimpse of some writing with a logo on his hat. Robert and I caught this at the same time. From this camera angle, it was not clear, and we attempted to enhance it, and it blurred out, becoming completely unreadable. Without hesitation, I popped out the first memory card and, taking note of the time frame in the left-hand corner, I popped in the second one and queued it up to the exact time as the first when the hat logo had been seen. Clear as a bell, it read, "Wizards, Wonders, and Psychics."
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Neither of us had ever heard of such a place, but that didn't mean a thing because we're not familiar whatsoever with the supernatural. This paranormal stuff was so far removed from Robert and my simple lives. We were determined to investigate this Wizards, Wonders, and Psychics. After a quick internet search, the website popped up. It was one that boasted of necromancy, dark magic, ghost hunting, and cryptic identifying. It certainly sounded like a lot of BS to both of us, but we had to take it seriously since this person was, or these people were, involved with the retrieval of zombies. Scrolling through the pictures of their facility and taking note of their physical address, we came across a picture of a face that we instantly recognized. Under this picture, the caption read, "The Eldritched One." It was a former classmate from high school, Thurman Sheriff. Neither of us could believe it. After graduation, we never saw him again, and to that fact, I never even thought of the guy. We all knew him well at the time, but it had been some years since our school days. We agreed to get cleaned up, hit the sack, think this through before we did anything. We were not certain if we truly wanted the answers. First of all, the money was good. Secondly, the money was good. Thirdly, the money was good. But on the downside, we were going to find ourselves possessed by an otherworldly creature ripped apart by a zombie or behind bars? We needed answers, and we planned to get them. Wizards, Wonders, and Psychics did not open until Monday, and we just so happened to be the first ones to walk through the door when the open sign was flipped around from the closed. At first, no one was present. The shop was strangely and clinically vacant. Thurman's picture, in some sort of Harry Potter-type garb, was hanging on the wall. And speaking of the walls, they were all draped in curtains of red. A single table sat in the center of the room, and a glass counter concealed a portiere. Robert and I made our way to the counter, where there was a cheesy bell to ring, so I pushed the button. A chime could be heard somewhere off in the distance. We heard a rustling like someone getting up from out of some contraption with chains. Thurman walked through the doorway and practically fell back through once he laid eyes on us. His expression was that of mortifying surprise, as if he'd been caught with his hand in the cookie jar. "Whoa, hey, fellas!" He sounded very excited, but not in a good way. I leaped the counter glass and with both hands pinned him to the wall. He did not struggle or fight back. "Answers!" I raised my voice as his eyes widened. Okay. No violence. Let me explain," he whimpered. "It's not me, man. It is other forces beyond me, I swear. I had to have help. I thought of you guys. You guys are big guys and without family attachments, so I thought you were perfect." He seemed like a man pleading not to be beaten to a pulp. I eased up on him, but stayed close and watched his hands so that he didn't do anything rash. "Well, explain," Robert yelled. "Can we sit, please?" Thurman asked, his voice less shaky. We three sat at the table after I had Thurman turn his open sign to closed and locked the door. "You see, this guy, very rich, very powerful, very menacing, had me conduct a seance for him. He wanted to speak to some ancestor that was here before they flooded the valley and drove all of the people away. We made contact. I was freaked out. This entity said that the people of the valley were drowning and needed to be rescued. I know this sounds insane, but hear me out. This thing actually spoke through me, and I remember, it still gives me the chills. It said they were drowning, and if someone on this side would bury them, they would come out and allow themselves to be buried properly. This ritual dude demanded I do it. It was very persuasive. He's paying me a fortune to do this, but I knew that I couldn't dig graves every night, so I employed you guys. You're built for it. I didn't mean any harm, and I thought if I paid you well, I assumed you wouldn't ask questions or come looking for me. I met the words with skepticism. You do not expect us to just keep on with this, I proposed aggressively. Listen, you guys, this man that came to me is dangerous. He's inimical to my soul. He's inculating my demands and unreasonable instructions. I'd never met anyone like him. He was extraordinary. He had presence and chemistry, and he made severe and dreadful threatening innuendos concerning my obligation. It was incomprehensible. Honest, I'd never felt such vibrations or intensity as I'd felt that day. I knew Thurman was speaking the truth by the way his body tensed and shook. Thurman went on to explain how it worked. He'd receive a phone call from this stranger who gave instructions. Thurman would go to the dock and simply put the bodies in the body bag. The stranger had supposed that Thurman would then bury the bodies himself, but now he was subcontracting the work out to me and Robert. Then there would be a precarious abeyance, just long enough to obliterate Thurman's nerves. As strenuous and as deprecating as this was to Thurman, he believed there was no way out. "Do you know this man's name or where he's calling you from?" I inquired. "I do not. He calls, I answer, I ask no questions." Thurman replied. "What time does he phone you?" Robert inquired. "It's been at 4 p.m. I made a note of it." I was unsure what to do. I loved the money, but zombies coming from a watery grave like a movie Dead in the Water was unsettling. "Robert, you're in this with me. Do we keep collecting these bodies and make the cash? Or do we find this mystery man to end this?" I asked critically. I'm doing whatever you think's best," Robert answered. At that precise moment, the phone shop rang and we three reacted. "It's too early to be him," Thurman said hesitantly, not knowing whether to answer the phone or let it continue ringing. "Answer it. If it's him, put him on speakerphone," I ordered. Thurman picked up the phone and pushed the speaker button. "Tonight at midnight," ominously the deep voice instructed. I could not help myself. I chimed in. "What's your name?" There was a lapse of silence, and the voice returned. "Thurman, what have you done?" "I'm sorry, but I needed help. I asked a friend to help me dig." Thurman's voice sounded defeated and afraid. Again, there was a lull, as if the person on the other end of the line was thinking. "You fool. This is unacceptable. You were not to involve anyone else. You do not know what you've done." The man's voice was quite agitated, and a fierce tone blasted over the speaker. "How is this any different now?" asked Robert. "Thurman, who is that? How many people have you employed?" the man demanded to know. "Just a couple of old school buddies from way back," Thurman was distressed. The man spoke again, but this time he sounded disquiet. "I made a deal between you, Thurman, and I. I explained our agreement to the people I answered to. The agreement was that the gateway would open on condition that only you and I carried out this exhumation and burials. Now you've gone and brought in outsiders. They were not part of the seance. I fear we may have trouble, the man said. Trouble? What sort of trouble? I was anxious to know. The man stated, I can't go into details, but the people I work for were adamant that we bring no more than two people from the lake at a time, and that only two people should know about this, and they were Thurman and I. I don't know what the consequences might be now. You see, when the spirit spoke through Thurman at our initial seance, it spoke of a gateway opening for a short period of time so it could bring the dead to the surface, to the docks. The gateway could not stay open, for then all of the residents of the lake would come out at once. That would look like a zombie apocalypse. I'm not sure by bringing in two outsiders if we've broken our agreement with the spirits of the dead or not. Do you mean there's a possibility that all of them might come out at once? Robert sounded mortified. There would be no way to bury that many people, Thurman reasoned. How many bodies are we talking about? I asked. The man on the phone addressed my question in his most morbid tone. Thousands. That was troubling. The four of us were now in deep waters. This situation was over our heads. All we could do, and this is what was agreed upon, was go to the docks tonight together and see if what the mystery man predicted was going to be some horrid reality. We arrived at the docks before midnight, and there were no bodies on the docks at all. The mystery man showed up as well, which was a huge concern, that he would break the cloak of his identity. Because of his appearance, we knew it was serious. He was an older man, probably in his 60s, well-groomed, silver hair, and he never told us his name. Right before midnight, the time that Thurman would normally arrive with his body bags, the water began to stir. What was still water was becoming small waves and circling bubbles, creating a whirlpool effect about 50 feet off the shoreline. We watched with fearful anticipation as the first zombie was seen. It was a man, and it walked with every dead affliction, water draining from the gaping hole in its belly. Another one appeared, and we realized that this too was a man. If anything, we'd hoped for a woman, like before. That would mean maybe just a married couple was returning to dry ground to be buried together. But no, a third man emerged, missing an arm and dragging its skeleton legs as if all energy had left him many moons ago. And this continued, and the most troubling thing of all is that not one of these unembalmed inhuman creatures leaving the cold, chilly waters was going to the dock. There, they were lumbering along and disappearing into a forested area. What's going on? Robert, concerned, was noted by all. What have we done? Thurman asked, not expecting an answer. The mystery man looked absolutely mortified. We must collect them and put them in the ground. There's so many, I mumbled as number 20 made it to dry land. That evening, the four of us worked to collect as many zombies as we could. To our dismay, they were unlike movie zombies. These creatures were not hungry. They were tired and were searching for a place to rest. The bed of my truck was packed with these creatures, and so was the mystery man's truck. We were not going to have the luxury of time to bury these creatures before the sun came up, so we moved them to my parents' farm, where they had an enormous barn that was not in use. Thousands of zombies did not emerge that night. I would estimate about 50 in total the first night. We rented a backhoe and dug a mass grave on the farm without either of my parents suspecting a zombie apocalypse was underway, but then they seldom questioned anything that I was doing. We hoped that we were doing the right thing and that these creatures of human descent would find this burial adequate. Every time we would lead 50 or so into the mass grave and then cover them up, and we knew we had one more hole to dig. One hole to go. I hope you enjoyed One Hole to Go by Dale Thompson, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented featured author, well, you can help support him by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/Dale-Thompson. That's DALE-THOMPSON. Thanks again for your support of this program and tonight's featured author. And I hope you enjoyed what you've heard tonight. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you personally for joining me on this podcast of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes featuring twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 a month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyrie channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too. Just search for Otis Gyrie. Until next week, stay spooky. Get some sleep, if you can.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.